This is Nancy Pippin with the Pantograph for Wednesday, March 15th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page, and on the front page there is a celebration going on. There are pictures from the Bloomington High School basketball players and fans celebrating after the Raiders defeated Marengo during Tuesday's Class 3A Northern Illinois Super Sectional at the Convocation Center in DeKalb. And it said the win gave BHS its first tournament, state tournament appearance in 42 years. And David Prober has presented these pictures of the fans and of the players and of the trophy they have received. Very, very nice. So, and then we're going to start with the White House says that President Trump paid $38 million in taxes, made $150 million in 2005. This is by Jill Colvin of the Associated Press. The White House said Tuesday that President Donald Trump made more than $150 million in income in 2005 and paid $38 million in income tax that year. The acknowledgement came shortly before MSNBC host Rachel Maddow reported on two pages of Trump's 2005 tax forms on her Tuesday night show. The records were obtained by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David K. Johnston, who said he received the documented unsolicited in the email. The documents have been highly sought after because Trump refused to release his returns during the campaign, breaking a decades-long tradition. He claimed he was under audit by the Internal Revenue Service, and his attorneys had advised him against it, though experts and the IRS said such audits didn't bar taxpayers from releasing their returns. The White House pushed back preemptively Tuesday night, saying that publishing those returns would be illegal. You know you are desperate for ratings when you are willing to violate the law to push a story about two pages of tax returns from over a decade ago, quote, end quote, the White House said in a statement. The unauthorized release or publishing of federal tax returns is a criminal offense punishable by a fine of up to $5,000 and up to 5 years in jail. But Maddow argued that MSNBC was exercising its First Amendment right to publish information in the public interest. Based on the documents obtained by Johnston, Trump paid $36.5 million in taxes on the $153 million in income for an effective tax rate of around 24%. That percentage is higher than the roughly 10% the average American pays each year, but below 27.4% that taxpayers earning $1 million a year average, according to data from the Congressional Joint Committee on Taxation. Trump's tax returns spotlight the role of the alternative minimum tax, which was established nearly five decades ago to prevent the wealthy from using deductions and clever accounting to largely avoid paying taxes. The AMT is a separate gauge of tax liability that, according to critics, has ensnared more middle-class people than intended, raising what they owe the federal government each year. It requires many taxpayers to calculate their taxes twice, once under the rules for regular income tax, then again under AMT, and then pay the higher amount. Though opponents of the AMT have focused on the growing number of upper-middle-class earners who pay the tax, Trump's 2005 disclosure shows it prevented him from avoiding most of the taxes he paid in 2005. If not for AMT, Trump's effective tax rate would have been 3.5%. Trump, according to his campaign website, has said he wanted to eliminate the tax, which is expected to bring in more than $350 billion in revenues from the 2016 to 2025 tax years. Trump long insisted the American public wasn't interested in his returns and said little could be learned from them, but Trump's full returns could contain key details about things like his charitable giving, his income sources, the type of deductions he claimed, how much he earned from his assets, and what strategies he used to reduce his tax bill. The issue was a major point of attack from his election rival Hillary Clinton, who suggested Trump had something to hide. The White House has not said whether or not the president plans to release his returns while he's in office. More than 1 million people have signed a White House petition urging the president to release them. And then we have pictures of President Trump via Evan Bucci. And we move on to another item in government and politics here locally. The airport urges replacement for soccer fields by Derek Bay. Central Illinois Regional Airport officials made one thing clear about community fields on Tuesday. They remain a short-term solution only for Bloomington Normal's youth soccer needs. I certainly, personally, more than willing to talk about temporary arrangements, but we're skating on very thin ice, was a quote from Jay Allen, a member of the Bloomington Normal Airport Authority's Board of Commissioners. He states, "We'd love to continue to be host, but not to our own demise or disadvantage." In a wide-range discussion, commissioners agreed they need to respect guidance from the Federal Aviation Administration, which has said the airport-owned soccer fields are a safety hazard and a violation of federal guidelines. The local soccer community has pushed a new $16 million recreational complex to replace the fields, but that effort has been stymied by a lack of financial support from the City of Bloomington, and the FAA promised in 2012 to allow the fields to operate through December 31st of 2017. The current lease between CIRA and the Prairie City Soccer League, one of a few organizations to use the fields, runs through the end of the year as well. While the airport could continue to lease the land, it would risk losing future FAA grant money and other penalties, said CIRA Executive Director Carl Olson. Quote, "Our office was advised that in addition to asking for an extension, project advocates would also like to approach congressional elected officials to support a permanent waiver," he said. "And again, my initial response in that situation is it's problematic for the airport authority, but it's a decision the board has to make," end quote. Board members also agreed they're not interested in leading an effort to ask the FAA to reconsider, though they'll consider a new lease for the land if the FAA indicates its support. Normal City Manager Mark Peterson told the board that officials will stump for the FAA extension during their annual One Voice trip to Washington, D.C. this month, and a group of local leaders is scheduled to meet with Republican U.S. Representatives Rodney Davis of Taylorville and Darren LaHood of Dunlap, and possibly Democratic U.S. Senators Tammy Duckworth and Dick Durbin. If the fields at the airport close before the replacement is found, an estimated 3,000 soccer players with PCSL, Illinois Fusion, and Bloomington High School will be spread across Twin City parks and other spaces, many of which are not specifically intended for soccer. Quote, we owe it to those 3,000 kids, not to mention their parents, to try to get an extension, Peterson said. 5 years isn't enough. 10 years, that might be. Commissioner Alan Sender said another five-year agreement isn't enough given the lack of progress on the new facility, and he favors a longer-term lease that lets the airport use the land when it wants. Olson said such an agreement would leave the airport legally vulnerable. We're not going to have in the next 2 or 3 years or even 5 years a site like Champion Field, which is West Normal, for baseball or softball. It's reasonable to think there isn't going to be any action in the near future, Sender said. I don't believe that a lease could not be structured to protect us. Peoria real estate agency The Kim Group is working on a public-private replacement that would be near the Riven Automotive plant in West Normal, but Peterson said that would still require money from both cities. He said a facility could be done 3 years after getting the funding. Kate Kim, group director, said she hoped to reveal more about the plan this spring, and she could not be reached for comment late Tuesday. And Steve Smedley gives us a picture of soccer players on the field as an Allegiant airline plane is taking off, and it's about the Bloomington High School soccer players warm up for a game. This was in September of 2015. While a plane takes off from Central Illinois Regional Airport behind them. And let's see, then we also have Pam Zimmerman's fear of harm should be heard at the trial. This is by Edith Braided Elunny. And she states that Pam Zimmerman's fear that her ex-husband was capable of killing her should be heard by the jury considering murder charges against him, according to the motions filed by prosecutors. Pam Zimmerman was found in her Bloomington office on November 4, 2014, lying on the floor, shot 4 times by Kirk Zimmerman, according to first-degree murder charges, because he was angry over her recent engagement and disputes over money. Zimmerman, 58, has pleaded not guilty. In a motion filed by McLean County, prosecutors Adam Grist, Mary Cole, and Brad Rigdon, the state asks that statements made to police by 13 witnesses and emails about the Zimmerman's rocky relationship be allowed at his still unscheduled trial. The state argues that statements normally barred under hearsay rules are relevant to show the suspect's motive and intent to kill his ex-wife, 53. Zimmerman's daughter, Rachel Zimmerman, told police in a November 4, 2014 interview that her mother had discussed Kirk Zimmerman's money from his employment at State Farm, money he should have divided with Pam as a part of their divorce, said the court filing. Prosecutors allege that Pam Zimmerman told her daughter that when this was discussed, her ex-husband, quote, got so mad that it scared Pam, so she just let the defendant keep the money, end quote. Friends of Pam Zimmerman told detectives that Pam said if anything were to happen to her, Kirk did it, according to police statements. 3 days before she died, Pam Zimmerman predicted to friends Curtis and Carolyn Ronkamp that when her former spouse learned of her engagement, he would, quote, probably go ballistic, end quote, said the motion. Pam Zimmerman then put a finger to her head as if she were pointing a gun and added, quote, it wouldn't surprise me if I was at the kitchen sink washing dishes and he shot me in the head, the couple told police in a statement about a week after the killing. Kathleen Kraft, the Bloomington lawyer who represented Pam Zimmerman in the couple's contentious 2012 divorce, told detectives the victim was afraid of her husband of 20 years. The lawyer said these fears intensified in January of 2013 after Pam Zimmerman filed a demand in court against Zimmerman for about $6,000 in unpaid expenses related to their three teenage children. Money disputes between the Zimmermans were the topic of heated disagreement, chronicled in emails filed in court records. Kirk Zimmerman's plan to retire at age 55 was derailed by the divorce, according to his comments in an April 29, 2012 email exchange with his ex-wife. Quote, "This process has gone on a shocking number of weeks, and I cannot wait to be done with you, but will not hand you my life savings to so close to retirement." End quote. Kirk Zimmerman wrote his soon-to-be ex-wife. Quote, "I, too, cannot wait to be done with you," end quote, Pam Zimmerman countered in her reply. According to the state's motion, the couple's divorce mediator, Karen Anderson, in June 2012, wrote about Pam Zimmerman's dilemma in asking for half of her husband's pension. Quote, "If he doesn't get his pension, he can't afford to retire. That alone will break him. He hates his job. If I'm the cause of him not being able to retire, then I fear that what he'll do to me or to kids or to himself. I don't care to live like that," end quote. At a pretrial hearing last week, Griss said he plans to call 13 witnesses when the motion is heard during several hearings not yet scheduled in May. We have below a picture of Kirk Zimmerman appearing in court in McLean County by Steve Smedley. And that concludes our article at this point. In other local news, we have Warburp, WBRP, is moving into former Jesus House. This is by Maria Nagel. The West Bloomington Revitalization Project has purchased the former Jesus House at 724 West Washington Street to consolidate all its programs, including a new bike co-op at one site. This is a proud milestone in our 10-year history, said Deborah Helpern, a WBRP volunteer and former board member. "It's really been a remarkable journey for this grassroots organization. The WBRP, however, won't have to move too far. In fact, this will be the third building the group has occupied at the intersection of Allen and Washington Streets. We are up to our eyebrows in tools and activity and trying to do more, but running out of space," said Halperin. "Then Jesus House was up for sale, and we went across the street, saw all of this space that would be really wonderful for all the things we're doing. After deciding to take the Jesus House ministry on the road, owners Bonnie and Thomas Lintz sold all Jesus House building for an undisclosed price to the WBRP, whose goal is to connect residents and enhance neighborhoods on the city's west side through educational and charitable programs. WBRP is raising $100,000 in donations for repairs at its new location, building a new roof, tuck pointing, and electrical work. We've raised about $48,000 so far," said Halpern. "With more than 3,000 square feet of the first floor space, the new location will be able to accommodate all of WBRP's programs, which include bike repair work, the tool library, which is a free tool lending service, a community computer lab, a bicycle-based free mobile library, community gardens, and Veggie Oasis, which provides free produce that is fresh. It's really exciting to see the potential that the space has that so that we can grow, said Halpern. We can accommodate lots of volunteers and programming all happening at one time. If it can move into the renovated space by May, the group plans to start the WBRP Bike Co-op and earn a bike program in June. The new program will replace the group's annual walk-in bike out, which has given away more free bikes than which has given away for free more than 1,000 donated and rebuilt bicycles to children or adults in need of reliable and affordable transportation. So the bike giveaway event on April 22nd at the Creativity Center, 107 East Chestnut, likely will be the last. People can ask questions about WBRP's expansion at the group's annual meeting from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Wednesday at First Christian Church, 401 West Jefferson Street. And then we have a picture of the two-story building as it looked in November 2016. At that point, it had a for sale sign on it. It is located at 4724 Washington Street. In local news, healthcare will decline under GOP bill, protesters say. This is by Paul Switch, and it starts that since the Affordable Care Act took effect, Dr. Catherine Crockett, a Bloomington ophthalmologist, has seen patients she hadn't seen before. Diabetics with eye disease, people going blind from cataracts, they're coming in because they had a card, an insurance card, that is. And I'm interested in taking care of people, Ms. Crockett continued. Trump Care won't do that. Crockett was among several speakers at a Tuesday evening rally opposing the proposed American Health Care Act, sometimes called Trump Care, which is intended to replace the Affordable Care Act, ACA, also known as Obamacare. During a January rally, also regarding ACA repeal and replacement, organized by the same group at the same location in front of the Bloomington Center for Performing Arts, and in similar cold weather, about 30 people attended and several passing drivers honked their horns in support. On Tuesday evening, more than 70 people attended, and the honking by passing drivers was frequent, as attendees held up signs such as ACA saved my life and save our health care. And as they chanted, health care is a human right, and this is what democracy looks like. I'm seeing people the past couple of years who I didn't see before because they have a card, Crockett said. Crockett told the Pentagraph after this rally, they needed care before and weren't getting it. Crockett is concerned that the proposed American Health Care Act, supported by Republicans in Congress and President Donald Trump, will reduce the number of insured. Several speakers at the rally cited the Congressional Budget Office analysis released Monday that said 14 million Americans would lose health care next year under the legislation. Every American has a right to basic health care, Crockett said. You can't have a workforce without people being healthy. But U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, Republican of Taylorville, released a statement earlier saying that the CBO report proves that our constituents already know that Obamacare has increased their costs, limited their options, and forced them to purchase insurance that they can't afford, while at the same time it provides them hope that things will improve under our plan that lowers premiums, gives them more options, and provides tax relief and reduces the national deficit. Dr. David Gill, an emergency department physician and Democrat who is running against Davis, said at the rally that he has treated patients without insurance. They end up sicker than they should have been, Gill said. Obamacare was a step in the right direction. Judy Riffle, 50, of Bloomington, held up a sign that read, "For Time, Cancer Survivor. Rodney, may I please survive number 5. "I don't want to see health care go backwards," she said. Linda Unterman, 69, of Bloomington, among the rally organizers, said, "We want our representatives in Congress to pay attention to what we're saying and to vote no on the GOP bill." And we have below then pictures of, by Jim Finch, of the people rallying in the cold against the Affordable Care Act, against American Health Care Act, Tuesday evening. And we have Junis Rodriguez, a Eureka College history professor and Democratic candidate for Congress last year, who said at Tuesday evening's rally that no physical conservation would approve the proposed American Health Care Act. And last of all, there's a third picture that shows that ACA saves lives, and again, talking about more than 70 people listening to the protesters and speakers on the Health Care Act. And here in the last couple of minutes of our first half hour, let's go through Flick's fact. Here's the question. There already is a middle town in Logan County, but there used to be a middle town in Champaign County also, because it was the halfway point between Danville and Bloomington. Do you know what the city is called today? Okay. And your choices are A, Urbana, B, Mohammed, C, Champaign, or D, Rantoul. So, the question is, what Champaign County town used to be called Middletown and was since renamed? It is halfway between Bloomington, or Danville, and Bloomington. Okay, and the answer is... Help. I'm not finding it. Hang on. The answer is B, Mohammed. Mohammed used to be the Middleton of Champaign County. I apologize for the my not finding it. It's a one-line answer there. So, also coming up, we have highlights in history that March 15th, 1767, the 7th President of the United States, Andrew Jackson, was born in the Waxhaw Settlement along the North Carolina-South Carolina border. And we'll be back with the second half of the Pentagraph for March the 15th, Wednesday, March 15th. So please stay tuned.